Monday night edition of the pod. Going to do a fun one here. Well, I guess it won't be so fun to actually go back and look at our predictions from last year, which were not particularly accurate, and there's still a year out from happening too. But wanted to take a look into our apparently defective crystal balls and try to anticipate where the league will be as of 2020, 2 years or so from now. Last year we did where we thought it would be in 2019, around this time. So what we're going to do, we're going to pick the who we think will be the final four, just talk about who will be there, then talk about some of who maybe the worst teams will be, and pick a champion, finals MVP, MVP, all NBA teams. Should be a fun ride here. So Danny, why don't we start by talking about the Western Conference and who you see as some of the candidates to be in the final two teams in the Western Conference, the 2020 Western Conference Finals.
Yeah, so to clarify, we're talking about the 2019-20 season, so this would be the 2020 playoffs is 2 years from now. So I think that the two most likely teams to be there are the two teams that are most likely to be there this year, the Warriors and the Rockets. Both of those teams are incredibly good right now, and yes, for age-related reasons, we could see both of those teams take step back, and their entire cores are not locked in, but I think they're the top two. There are a lot of other teams that have consideration, and it doesn't even include necessarily the unpredictability of it, you know, team rising. But so the other teams that I thought were worthy of consideration, San Antonio has Kawhi Leonard. If he gets back to being there, that would be the season after he becomes a free agent if he doesn't sign a designated veteran extension. But assuming he does, then they would still be quite good. The Utah Jazz, you know, if they can be healthy, they've already been good this year. They are on the positive side, generally speaking. Of
but
the
why don't we break off and talk about a few of those teams here. I mean, you mentioned Houston and Golden State.
Sure.
I had them as probably the top two candidates as well, but certainly, you know, it's nowhere, not as much of a slam dunk as Golden State appeared to be. I mean, we've seen them kind of break down this year. They've been taken easy. I mean, they look like they're pretty fatigued already. I mean, this has been now the fourth straight year of, you know, being in finals contention. So you're going to have to rebuild around them, get some more minimum guys. You know, David West will probably be out of the picture. Maybe Jordan Bell could be their starting center, though they'll have to re-sign him at that point. Klay Thompson, they would have to re-sign him. Also, Draymond Green, you know, could be on the downside. I mean, what are the ages of those four main guys 2 years from now in Golden State? I think that's interesting here for context.
So we're using Basketball Reference ages for this. That isn't necessarily what they'll be in the playoffs, but that season. Curry, 31 season. Durant, age 31 season. Klay Thompson, age 29 season. Draymond Green, age 29 season.
Yeah, and so certainly any of those guys could age pretty well. I think KD, Curry, Klay, all guys with their shooting who might age a little bit better than normal. Draymond, I anticipate to age a little bit worse than normal. He's more reliant, I think, on quickness, athleticism, jumping ability as an undersized power forward slash center. You know, can he continue to be an undersized center in the playoffs in their best lineups? Will they need someone else to play center? You know, can that be Jordan Bell? And then obviously there's a chance that Thompson could leave in 2019, chance that there could be some kind of a trade that takes place for them as well. They're going to need to continue to fill in around those guys, maybe a little bit better than they've done this season. You have to imagine that Iguodala will still be under contract, but you feel like he's not going to really be contributing at the level of the fifth guy. Maybe at that point they would move on from him or have to stretch him or something due to tax concerns, and the tax is going to continue to be an issue for this team. But I think I agree with you, they're probably the most likely team to be there just because they have so many of these guys and it doesn't look like any of them are going anywhere. But certainly possible that by the time these guys reach late 20s, early 30s, in the case of their two best guys, that they may just not all be good enough, or that they could be more likely to succumb to injury, as we're starting to see this year a little bit.
It's also worth mentioning that the Rockets, you and I have talked about this a little bit at moments in time, that they're older, I think, than some people think. I mean, so that will be Harden's age 30 season. He and Curry were the same draft class, but Harden played fewer years in college than Curry did. And then other guys, Chris Paul, that will be his age 34 season. We don't know if Trevor Reese is going to be back, but that would be his age 34 season. Capella would be, you know, getting towards his prime, age 25. Gordon, 31. Bamute, if they re-sign him, 33. Nene, 37.
Yeah, and now part of this too, it's interesting. I mean, Clint Capella, what's his contract going to be? The Rockets may be facing as bad or worse of a luxury tax bill than the Warriors are going to. Tillman Fertitta has said that he is willing to pay that. You know, I think the Warriors have at least somewhat of a hard cap at some point. You know, we'll see what kind of discounts people are willing to pay or take there. Chris Paul could be a free agent too. It's possible he could leave. I mean, what if they just get upset in the second round or something? We're assuming that they're going to be awesome and that they'll get to this Western Conference Finals with the Warriors. But we could also see, you know, I mean, there's been talk that they could be on LeBron James's shortlist somehow or another, that he could end up there in some fashion. So a lot of more variability with this team than you think. I mean, really, the only stalwart that we know is going to be there, or as know as much as we can, is Harden. And at age 30, I think, you know, he's someone who should probably age pretty well with his shooting, with his strength. So I would have Houston at number two behind Golden State. I still would have Golden State a little bit more likely. I think they have more overall talent, especially when you consider that, you know, with Paul being age 34, that's a lot different than Curry and Durant being age 31.
Okay, so I've named a couple teams outside of them. Where would you go as the third most likely top two team?
Oof. Well, probably San Antonio again, just because Kawhi Leonard is so good. But they have a lot of variables as well. LaMarcus will still be around then. That'll be the last year of his contract for $26 million. You mentioned how Kawhi is eligible for designated player, but between him potentially leaving or him just not being quite the same guy with this quad tendinopathy, you know, I'm not sure I want to count on them. I actually think the fourth highest team is maybe the LA Lakers. You know, they and I toyed with them maybe even for third. You know, obviously, for them to get to that point, it would probably have to be either, you know, they get LeBron and Paul George together this year, or maybe they get someone else in 2019 when they project to have plenty of space as well. And that obviously would also require their young core to come around to at least be support pieces, or maybe just be traded for more veteran help. That could easily happen as well. I mean, you're basically talking about Kuzma and Ball and Ingram, maybe Randall, but you know, depending on what happens this summer. But this is just based on the fact that they are going to have a ton of space, and in one of these 2 years, they presumably are going to use it on guys who can play, even if it's not the absolute top superstars. I fully expect that at the very least they will be a solid playoff team by 2019-20, unless they just pull a Mitch Kupchak with their cap space again.
A couple other teams that I think are worth considering and mentioning. Minnesota at that point, Karl Anthony Towns will be age 24, which, again, remarkable how young he is. Wiggins, 24, 30. He will be on his next contract at that point, whether, yeah, you know, presumably that will be with Minnesota. We don't know that for sure. They're mentioning, and then Utah, I said them briefly earlier, Rudy Gobert, 27, Donovan Mitchell, 23. They have cap flexibility probably in 2019, not 2018. And then, you know, they have young guys, and the only person I'm particularly worried about aging out is Ingles, though Derek Favors could obviously leave.
Yeah, and Jay Crowder will still be on the team. He'll be a little bit older as another one of these undersized guys, but they're a team that their coaching is good. You know, they're going to maximize the talent that they have. I mean, really though, if you're talking about making a Final Four, Donovan Mitchell has got to just completely blow up and become really, you know, a top 20 player in the NBA, which, you know, is not impossible. I think he could potentially get there at this point. And then, yeah, where is the support players going to come from? How are they going to use that cap space? I mean, for the summer of 2019, as of now, they've got Gobert, Ingles, Alec Burks, and then everything else is rookie contracts. They project to have $47 million in space for the summer of 2019, but some of that could easily be eaten up with what happens this summer if they bring back Favors, if they, you know, there's a lot of things that could change there. Draft picks could eat into that a little bit. So, but they do have a lot of flexibility. I mean, one of the things that's going to be a theme here is there are a lot of teams with 2019 flexibility right now, and how many of them affect that in the summer of 2018 is going to be a huge variable here. Minnesota, unless Karl Towns just becomes an awesome two-way player, you have to wonder. I mean, because basically between Wiggins, Butler, Towns, and Gorgui Dieng, probably Jeff Teague will be on the team as well. He has a player option for $19 million that he's probably going to pick up, I would imagine, in the summer of 2019. They are going to be in tax land. And I'm not sure, maybe they could move Jang at that point, but he still has another year after that one. He's playing 15 minutes a game for them right now. So, and we know what the center market is. And then I don't really trust Tom Thibodeau as the GM to do, to get them into more of a modern style. So it really would take Karl Towns and maybe Wiggins as well becoming great players. And then Jimmy Butler has to hold on to what he is. But I just, I'm not sure that is a core that I think could be good enough to be a Final Four team. It's just, are they going to get enough support pieces around them? And they don't really have the resources to do so at this point. They've got draft picks the next 2 years, but those guys probably won't be contributing as of yet. And if the Justin Patton pick so far is any indication, they're not exactly drafting for need at this point.
And the argument you just made with Minnesota sounds very similar to the one that could be made about New Orleans, except that there's additional roster uncertainty there. Davis, that'll be his age 26 season. Cousins, if he re-signs, that'll be his age 29 season, but they still have a lot to figure out. Drew Holiday will, of course, be under contract because he has a bunch more years, but they have a lot to figure out, and who knows? I mean, Davis, that will be his last year under contract, assuming he declines his player option, and if he does not sign the designated veteran extension, so that could be a year he gets traded. There are a lot of other complications there. So, certainly worth mentioning because of their ceiling with those two guys and Drew Holiday, but the risk there puts them below everybody else, I think, that we've already mentioned.
Yeah, considering that I believe there's probably a 50% chance that Anthony Davis is not even on the Pelicans for the 2019-20 season, maybe even more than that, and that Cousins, coming off the torn Achilles, yeah, they're probably going to retain him, it sounds like, but I don't expect him to be in the top echelon of centers anymore at that point, and they're going to be paying him a ton, and Drew Holiday will be on the downswing there as well, so difficult for me to imagine. I mean, we've been saying the whole reason I think Davis is going to be gone is because I don't see a path for them being really, a contender in the West, and so I'm not going to deviate from that stance now. Denver is an interesting one. Hard to see, I don't really see Nikola Jokic as someone who can get a lot better defensively, and that's a problem. Jamal Murray has limited tools there, but, they're going to have basically, they don't have much flexibility this year. They're looking at the tax, but it's really only 1 year that they got problems, and then they got a bunch of guys coming off the books, Chandler, Arthur, Fareed, and for 2019 right now, all they have under contract is Plumlee, $14 million, Jamal Murray, Gary Harris, and then rookie contracts, and Jokic, obviously. So even if Jokic is making the max around $25 million, which I expect him to be at that point, they could have as much as $30 million in space to work with, and you've got that nice core that they could maybe add to. We'll see if they're viewed as a destination at that point, but there are going to be some teams that are pretty decent. Utah, we mentioned, is another one. The Lakers could be also that would potentially have space. And for San Antonio, we kind of glossed over them a little bit talking about Kawhi. They don't have a ton of flexibility in the summer of 2019. Now, if Kawhi especially gets that designated player veteran extension, they're not really looking at a ton of flexibility unless they were to maybe move on from LaMarcus at that point. And I'm a little down on their GMing lately. I'm not sure that they are quite with it in terms of getting enough spacing, playing more of a modern style. Maybe that'll change if Kawhi comes back and we'll see some lineups that have some more spacing, but they really are still focusing on these very shooting challenged lineups these days. So I'm not sure I'm a believer that they're going to be able to put the pieces around Kawhi as much, but I just because he's so good, I still would have them as my number three, with maybe the Lakers as four, but they've got that Lakers team, of course, has a lot of upside.
One other quick thing I want to mention is that none of the teams at the absolute bottom of the West, I don't think they can pivot that quickly to, because we're talking top two. I think a lot of those teams could be in the playoff mix. Some of them may actually make it by that point. But to get to that level needs young players to deliver really quickly. Even if, let's say, Phoenix gets the number one pick and whoever they draft ends up being very good, it's still going to take them a couple years to get to that level. I mean, the LeBron or Chris Paul type rookies don't come along very often. And so I never predict that for anybody. So those four, the Kings, the Mavs, the Grizzlies, and the Suns. The Grizzlies probably have the most variance just because they have Gasol and Conley, but those guys weren't enough to propel Memphis to a top two standing, and they're going to be substantially older then than they are now.
Yeah, I don't necessarily see it for Dallas either. I'm not sure who the free agent is who's going to go there that's going to put them over the top. They'll get another nice pick this year, but especially all these teams that have rookie point guards, young point guards, it takes those guys a long time time to develop. Generally, you know, Dennis Smith, Lonzo Ball, those type of guys. The three that we haven't really mentioned at all, OKC and Portland. I mean, those are what, the 3 and 4 seeds right now in the West. Perhaps their fans are a little aghast that we don't really see them as potential contenders. But I think, you know, the Damian Lillard right now, this is age 28, so he'll be, or he just, I think he might have just turned 28, so that'll be 29 for him. Russell Westbrook, age 31 season, so I don't think they'll be quite as good as they are this year. Especially Russ has taken a step back this year. I expect him to maybe face a little bit steeper of a decline than some of his better shooting point guard brethren. And then, you know, they will have Carmelo coming off the books in the summer of 2019, but this assumes, number one, that they even get Paul George to return. And if they don't, I mean, I'm not really sure. You know, they could have like $20 million or so in 2019 space, but they've still got Steven Adams making $25 million, Westbrook making $38 million, and that's before they even re-sign Paul George. Melo will be off the books then, but it's, I don't really see how they add to their team at this point, although we certainly said that last year, and Sam Presti did pull Paul George out of his hat, but you know, I wouldn't count on that happening every year.
Portland faces a similarly challenging road to improve. They did a great job to get underneath the tax this year, but that doesn't buy them a ton of team building flexibility moving forward. We don't know what they're going to do with Yusuf Nurkic. That will also be the age 28 year for CJ McCollum. He's a little bit older because of the years he spent at Lehigh, and they don't have much flexibility. 1920, Evan Turner, Myers Leonard are still on the books. Al-Farouq Aminu will have been a free agent, so it'll take Zach Collins making a step in all likelihood. It will take figuring out something on the forward line, and I absolutely expect that if they keep Dame and CJ that they will be a playoff team, but top two is a completely different threshold.
All right, we'll talk about the rest of the league, the East, a lot of interesting stuff here to come. But first, this from our friends at Movement Watches. I actually just recommended one to my buddy Brett, who's a watch guy. He was really impressed. He said he'd been wanting one for a while. He used the mvmt.com/capspace URL. But it's not about the watches this time, actually, for Movement. It's about the sunglasses. I have bought plenty of $10 pairs of sunglasses. Those look awful. I've bought $200 pairs of sunglasses and felt like, you know what? I didn't really get my money's worth. I got ripped off. And so Movement is taking their approach to watches and applying it to sunglasses. They aren't just plastic sunglasses. They're acetate sunglasses. And there's a lot of styles to choose from. I really enjoy their aviators. That's the ones that I have. There are, you can get them polarized as well for much less expensive than you normally are going to get polarized sunglasses, and you can get them for men or for women, all starting at just $70. You know, the same thing that I always tell you to do for Movement watches, go to movement.com/capspace and just check out all of the sunglasses. I think you'll be very impressed with the quality that they have there, and finding the perfect pair at that movement.com/capspace URL is risk-free. They got free shipping and they also have free returns, so sometimes you really just need to look at how they are on your face. Now you have the chance to do that for free. So what do you get started with them? Again, get 15% off today, free shipping and free returns. Go to that movement.com, mvmt.com/capspace URL. Easy to remember. We've been talking about 2019 cap space quite a bit on this program. Movement.com, mvmt.com/capspace is that URL. Let them know that you came from us. So the Eastern Conference, I had three teams that I felt like were really in contention for this spot. And one was Cleveland, if perhaps LeBron sticks around, if perhaps they trade that Brooklyn pick. One was Philly. They have a lot of variables, obviously, with what happens with Markelle Fultz, what happens with this year's cap space, where they should be able to create close to, if not for certain, max space. And then Toronto, who has so many young guys, even though Lowry will be on the downside, DeRozan will be slightly on the downside, I still think that they have so many of these young guys that at least in the regular season, they should be able to be very good. We'll see what they look like in the playoffs this year. Is there anyone that you would add to that list that you think of as a serious contender to be in the Eastern Conference Finals in 2020?
The three you mentioned, you said Cleveland, Philly, and Toronto?
Yes.
Yeah, you missed my number
Milwaukee?
One. Milwaukee?
Oh, shit. Yeah, that's what I meant. I meant Boston. I'm sorry. I have it. I even have that in my notes. I don't know what the hell I'm doing. Yeah, it's. I knew I had three, and I was like, Cleveland? That doesn't sound like that's great. Yeah, so those are the top three. Boston, Philly, and Toronto are probably the biggest ones. Yeah,
those are my top three. And Boston, not only do they have under contract Kyrie. Well, so Kyrie could be a free agent at that point, but there have been little inklings that he will stay. We'll have to see with that. But Gordon Hayward is under contract. contract. Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum are under contract. Al Horford's under contract. And the elephant in their corner, as opposed to the Sixers, who were, that was the real jostling for me, is the draft assets that Boston still has remaining. They have, in all likelihood, it sounds like they're going to have the 2019 Sacramento unprotected first, or sorry, top one protected pick. Philly gets it if it's number one. They also might get Memphis's pick in 2019. And that's not those things are not necessarily relevant in terms of their 2019-20 team in terms of top four or top two in the East, but it's extremely valuable if in terms of trading for an established player like one Anthony
Davis. Yeah, Davis, Boston still seems like the most likely AD destination. Just to correct you on Horford, he does have a player option for $30 million that year. I assume that he will pick that up.
I think he could be
that option. Yeah, you know, I mean, he could be one of these ones where like he really likes it there and maybe he opts out and gets in for a longer period or something. You never know what could happen there, but or maybe he gets traded away for Anthony Davis as salary flotsam. You know, that seems, he's probably the most likely guy there. We'll see how much they can get together as far as like the human trade exception this year, but or this offseason, I should say. Yeah, so I think I would probably have, you know, because I think Toronto probably to me has the most certainty of any of these teams. You know, I mean, they've got all their main guys under contract. I mean, maybe Fred VanVleet, DeLon Wright could be out. You know, they're going to need some backup point guard, and they are going to be abutting against the tax most likely. But they should still have most of their guys who are young available. Maybe Norman Powell will be a trade casualty. But you know, I certainly trust them to put together a nice young bench as they've continued to do here. But sorry, give me your number one and two. Then we got to pick a top two.
Boston's my number one. They are incredibly talented right now. They have shown and they've managed talent.
Let me
well.
Ask you this about Boston.
A good job there, and then they have.
Let me ask you this about Boston. Let's say they don't. You know, they just use those draft picks. They don't make a trade. Do you think that they would? You still favor them to be in the top two just based on the development of like Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum and maybe like a Rozier or something like that? Or is your idea based on being able to make a trade?
Not at all. They don't have to make a trade. Kyrie Irving, assuming he stays, Gordon Hayward. I mean, Gordon Hayward, all NBA type talent. That will be his age 29 season. We don't know what he's going to be after injury, but I mean, that's an incredibly deep group. I think Brad Stevens is a great coach. Now, I am separating this out. When I think of top two, I will admit that I'm focusing in my head more on the regular season than the playoffs.
Yeah.
And I, you know, and so there are arguments, and we will see this a lot better in April, that the Sixers, you know, if this works, a really good playoff team, but if it doesn't, with their the severity of their weaknesses, it could go either way. And so with Boston, I think that's an advantage. And the Raptors, my concern with their key players right now, I agree that their depth is going to be strong and that will help make them a good regular season team, is that I would expect DeRozan, Lowry, and Ibaka to all be worse at that point than they have been this season. That will be Lowry's age 33 season, DeRozan's age 30 season, and Ibaka's age 30 season. I'm not super confident that Ibaka is going to age well. DeRozan, it depends. And then Lowry, I mean, he'll be 33 at that point. That he could slow down. If he slows down a half a step, that's going to hurt him a little bit. And they will be a very good team. I wouldn't be surprised at all if they were a top two seed, but I just don't see that upside of like a 60 to 65 win team, like really beyond what they've been this year. That part of it to me puts them at third, but I mean, it's 1-2-3. They could easily be in that mix.
We haven't mentioned Milwaukee at all, and I think Milwaukee is probably a decent bet to have the best player in the conference at that time. They do have some uncertainty, even with keeping this current team together, of course, because Chris Middleton has a player option for that season, which he probably will opt out of. Eric Bledsoe, his contract expires. Both of those guys could maybe get extensions. Jabari Parker is a restricted free agent, has some injury concerns. You know, even Malcolm Brogdon is a restricted free agent in the summer of 2019. So really the only guys that they have that we know for sure are going to be around at that point are Tony Snell, Matthew Dellavedova, Thon Maker, who's disappointed, DJ Wilson, and then Giannis, although there are some guys that are restricted that presumably will come back.
You didn't mention John Henson.
Well, I presume he'll be John stretched Henson, by then. That's why I said he wasn't, or traded away for tax concerns.
That's entirely possible. And the tax concerns are a very important point to make here with them, because Middleton Bledsoe and Jabari, assuming they are back on this team, will all be making more money than Giannis that year, about $26 million. So I don't know how Bucks ownership is going to feel about potentially paying the luxury tax. They're going to be right on that. And that could also be dictated to a degree by how they play next year in the 2018-19 season. If they are a top three or maybe even a top two team next year, it gets a lot easier to build your team around the idea that, okay, we're going to pay the tax for that season. And that's when those raises would largely kick in. So there's certainly in consideration here that will be the age 25 season for Giannis. Think about how good he is right now. I mean, he's going to finish in the top five in MVP. And generally speaking, players as good as he has been at the age he is now get better. So we'll see what that actually is. So yeah, I mean, he can be the key to it.
I've got something for you though. This is not what Bucks fans are going to want to hear. He might not even be on the team in the 2020 playoff. They could be forced to trade him by the trade deadline in 2020. He'll only have 1 year left under contract after that.
The Darren Williams hypothetical,
It's like if you have to trade him now, maybe it wouldn't be until that offseason, but we've seen that when guys only have 1 year left on their contract, you don't really get the maximum value for them. I mean, if they disappoint during that, there's no way they would trade him with 2 years left on his deal. I think they wouldn't consider that after next year, no matter how bad they are. But if they're just like not any closer and he says, hey, you know what, like we're clearly not winning here. The other reason I'm skeptical about them too, outside of that, is of them really getting to this type of level we're talking about, is the ownership situation has proved pretty toxic of late. Much of course depends on what kind of a coach they get too. You know, I mean, if they can get, we thought that Prunty was an upgrade that hasn't really been born out in their results since then, but if they can get a coach who's really at the top of the market, and I mean, because this on talent, I mean, even if you look at the guys that they have right now, it's not a great fit for a lot of them, and getting a center is the easiest position to fill, you know, so either Maker will improve or they'll probably get somebody else. So maybe, you know, just a coaching upgrade could get them right into this conversation, but I think there's just too many hoops they have to jump through at this point for me to say that, you know, I would be putting them in the same category as Philly, who remember is already better than them and has more young talent that's coming up the pipeline. And then even Cleveland, you know, I think if LeBron comes back and they have that Brooklyn pick, you know, maybe they can make something out of it. Although at some point LeBron has to slow down. He'll be 35 by this point.
Well, and also with Cleveland, that's LeBron re-upping for the long term, because him being on the team in 2018-19, that could be opting out and signing a 1+1 as the rest of this sorts it out, because it's such a constricted market in 2018. But if he's on the team in 19-20, that means he's going to be a Cav basically for the rest of his career, and that's a different commitment for the Cavs and for him. And I don't know where he's going to be, but I think that's a different thing than saying he'll be on their team next year. The other teams I want to mention briefly, we already did Milwaukee. Indiana, at that point, Victor Oladipo, biggest rising star this year, that'll be his age 27 season. Miles Turner, that will be his age 23 season. Super young. They have flexibility in terms of the cap. They can go in a lot of different directions. If they want to keep everything together for next year, then they would have a bunch of cap space in 2019, so they would have that team for 2020. I think that they'll probably be below top two even in some of the rosier scenarios there, but they have some upside, so I think we should talk about
that. No, I think so. Maybe Oladipo could take another small step forward, although I think if he can just consolidate his gains from this year or next season, that would be quite good. And Turner, I think, you know, we talked about what a weapon he's becoming offensively. Is he going to be able to deal defensively at the highest levels in the playoffs? And then, you know, what kind of support guys are they going to get? I mean, you don't see them getting another superstar in free agency. They're not going to get a high pick, which we thought they would, of course, at the start of the year. So yeah, I do think they're kind of more middle of the road type of playoff team, but maybe Oladipo and Turner could really blow up and some of these other teams could disappoint. Washington, another one that just seems to not. Beal and Porter are young. You know, I don't believe Porter has that much upside to explore. I think Beal is relatively close to where he's going to be, and then the bigger problem is Wall, especially with his injuries, could be on the downside, and they have less than zero cap flexibility between now and then.
And they have guys that are pre-prime, but I don't think they're very far pre-prime, so that will be age 26 for Beal and Porter. They could be a little better, not a ton, and then by that point maybe Marcin Gortat, they move on from him. They're still going to be paying Yan Mimi unless they've foisted him on someone else, so that'll be a challenge. And they have been good this year, but you think think about the level of those top teams, especially the top three, the expectation has to be how likely is it that this team wins 55 plus? And I could absolutely see the Wizards being a 45 to 55 win team, but pushing beyond that is going to take some real production from both the guys that are at the core of their team right now and support players, including building a more reliable bench.
Also noteworthy, last year we were talking about maybe Philly being in this category, and that's looking prescient. I don't see anybody in the non-playoff teams in the East that have even a sliver of a chance of getting into this conversation. And, you know, things can always change, you know, but that's our best guess right now. I mean, I don't see any of those teams with any kind of upward mobility over the next couple of years.
The best possibility for me would be the Knicks if Porzingis went supernova, but I don't expect that, especially now with the ACL
and they don't have any
injury.
Cap
that would
space.
Be his first full
they don't
season
really
back.
Have any cap space to add around him anyway.
They could do a little something in 2019, but they would have to manage it extremely well and be judicious this year, and there isn't exactly much of a precedent there, though they do have new management.
I mean,
thankfully.
The Bulls will have some space. I mean, maybe if one of these teams gets the number one pick and that guy blows up, and then they still have cap space in the summer of 2019, and so they're able to get somebody good, and maybe they could get into it. But it would take quite a run of luck, I think, for any of these teams that are just pretty darn downtrodden right now. I mean, among the non-playoff teams in the East, I think we talked about this, you know, who is the best player on those non-playoff teams in the East right now? Like, maybe Porzingis is the only guy that you could look at, and Blake Griffin, of course, is on the downside, but Porzingis is the only guy you could look at who really has, to me right now, a reasonable chance of being a top 20 type of player. And obviously, there's always surprises, but, you know, if we're going to rank who will be the top 20 players 2 years from now, I don't think there's anyone on any of those teams except maybe Porzingis, and that's if he recovers.
You and I both really like Lowry Markkanen, but I just don't see it at this point. That would be a big, big jump for him. And
it could happen.
Yeah, I think the best chance.
He might have the highest upside of any of the guys on those teams now.
Yeah, and I think a lot of these bottom teams in the East will be figuring it out at that point. Orlando could be Brooklyn. They'll finally be getting out of the woods at that point. So we could be optimistic about a lot of these teams. But again, the test here is top two. The test is not making the playoffs or looking good. So
this will be a good chance. Let's go back and look at what we said last year. I mean, so last year when we were predicting for 2019, my top two in the West was Golden State and San Antonio, and then I had Houston just below them. I noted in Houston that they could make about $20 million in space for the summer of 2017, and they getting Chris Paul was beyond anything that we thought they might be able to accomplish. And then Utah was kind of up there in the rankings, but we were like, oh, if they lose Gordon Hayward, they're sunk, but we didn't anticipate that they're going to get this awesome rookie with pick number 13 and even trade up for number 13. So that was we didn't anticipate that was going to happen at all. We did correctly foresee the declines in Memphis and the Clippers. You know, I think we both had them being out of the playoffs by 2019. That's probably, you know, looking like it's on path. The Clippers maybe will be a lower rung seed. And then were you pretty much in line with that in the West last year?
I was a little lower on the Spurs than you were. I had the Jazz second, and then I had Minnesota, then Houston, and Spurs. I think I was soured on them because of that. Those Powell, I think, was a part of that, and just the way that they invested in their space.
Yeah, well,
Minnesota.
Part of the reason I was so high on the Spurs was we thought that they could have $72 million in cap space in the summer of 2018 to build around Kawhi when nobody was going to have space, and then they went and signed Gasol and they signed Aldridge. You know, we thought that Green and Aldridge might opt out at that point. So they basically have used up all that space. It looked much brighter for them at this time last year, especially when they're on track for another 60 win season around Kawhi, who was an MVP candidate.
And just to give a sense of how different the league is now, I had Minnesota third, and they didn't have Jimmy Butler then. The trade hadn't happened this point last year, and it was Towns and Wiggins and that sort of an approach. Yeah. I've soured substantially on Wiggins since then.
Yeah, but what we thought for Minnesota, I mean, remember where they started this last summer. They started it, I know they got Butler, and that used up a bunch of their space, but they're starting with like $40 million in cap space, so we figured they had to get better. And Wiggins, I think, is disappointed in his development since then, although he is playing slightly better lately. I think Towns, you know, is disappointed defensively in his development since then. So, you know, I think the track seems to have narrowed for them a little bit more. And, you know, that now, especially that they have Butler, they've got all these tax concerns. They've gone from having a ton of flexibility. And also, we didn't know that Wiggins was going to be on a max extension already necessarily either. What about in the East?
I had Boston number one. I feel pretty good about that. I had Cleveland number two on the logic that Kyrie and Love were still under contract. Well, one of those two is still there. And I noted, I'm happy that I had this note in there, that it would be very hard for Cleveland to get better. That ended up, I mean, it went in a way that none of us expected at that time. But that same press, that I think that was part of what led to the Kyrie trade happening. Then after that, I went Milwaukee, Giannis-based, Philly, Washington. And my biggest mistake was selling short on Toronto, which I might be doing again by having them third, but I think that third is a whole heck of a lot better than presumably they were seventh on my list.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't, first of all, they had a bunch of free agents coming up. They did re-sign Lowry and Ibaka, and then what their young guys been able to do, DeRozan taking another step this year as well, which wasn't necessarily anticipated. So, yeah, I mean, it's interesting that a team that we thought was too old, we actually now are rosier on for 2020 than we predicted for them in 2019 a year ago. So that's kind of interesting. Let's talk about who the worst teams in the NBA will be now. There are a lot of candidates here, so we should probably just go through them. Last year, interestingly enough, we thought that Brooklyn and Sacramento would be the two worst in 2019, that neither of them looks to be on much of a path to being any good, although I would say there are probably a few teams now that for 2019 I would put below them. What do you think for this year? Who are some of the candidates for you?
So for the 2019-20 season, a lot of the teams that are at the bottom now, I don't think they're going to have the ability to turn around. So like Sacramento, I like some of the guys that they have now better than before. Like Bogdanovich has had a nice year. De'Aaron Fox, you know, I would say it's what I expect, but they don't have a ton of flexibility. They're still paying Zebo and all these guys for the 18 season. They have a little bit of flexibility, and then they also haven't proven that they can spend money well. So Sacramento is in the conversation.
Yeah, I think their young guys they're already not the worst record this year, though they're close to the worst net rating. So I think their young guys will improve just enough, and they'll still get it. I mean, they're still going to be trying to win, so they'll get some vets in there enough to that I don't see them being bottom two by 2020, but I certainly don't see them in the playoffs necessarily, but I don't see them being bottom two.
Yeah, I don't have them in my bottom two either.
Okay,
actually, I thought that would be a good place to start. Oh no, I do have them in my bottom two. That's interesting. I thought I was looking at my 2019 list, but I am looking at my 2020 list. And I think one of the most interesting places, because a lot of the teams that are bad right now, we expect to be bad, or just 2019-20 being an inflection point for a couple of these franchises. And the team that I have in, seriously in this mix is, and I have them as the my prediction right now for the worst team in 2019-20, the Charlotte Hornets.
Yep, because they're in my bottom two as well.
Because Kemba Walker will be a free agent that year, and he could certainly resign. They could make a mistake and just pay him too much money, and he seems happy there. Although he said he acted like he didn't want to be traded this year, and considering what happened, that could end up being what transpires. But they also just aren't very good, and unless Malik Monk or some other young guy I'm not thinking of, like the draft pick this year, really delivers, it's going to be hard for them to get a lot better. So if you think their ceiling is, maybe fringe playoff team and their floor is really, really low, then it would be hard for Kemba to stay there other than for money and comfort. And if he leaves, they don't have anybody who can carry the team. They have support players, but I also think that they would lean into it and just kind of grin and bear it probably for a lot of those guys in the last year of their contract, move the guys they can move, and just turtle under and get a good draft pick and build the next team.
Yeah, I mean, probably the only reason they wouldn't be there by that point is, just because they try to still be good and they try to sign some other people and they're perpetually chasing the eighth seed, so maybe they'll get to 33 wins or something. But I mean, we've talked about their future as being one of the bleakest in the NBA. You mentioned the inflection point. Two other potential candidates here. New Orleans could be awful if Anthony Davis leaves. Now, maybe they do one of these trades like the original CP3 trade was supposed to be, where they don't go for young guys. They just get, three quarters for the dollar that is Anthony Davis. But if he leaves, you have to imagine they'll be pretty bad. Even if they bring back DeMarcus, we haven't seen DeMarcus exactly have the ability to carry a bad team on his own. And who knows what his health situation will be. And then Cleveland, obviously, if LeBron leaves Cleveland, they could be a complete disaster.
And Cleveland doesn't have a ton of flexibility. They'll just have a bunch of money on their books. So that might be the year, 2020 might be if LeBron left, the year that they finally can really turn it around, because that's the year Love, Tristan Thompson, depending on what they end up doing with JR, like those kind of guys expire. So I could see them using that year to build the asset base to get better moving forward. And outside of that, I think it's really just kind of the other team that could fall off because of that sort of thing, though I don't anticipate it, is the Clippers, because they just, so that will be the last year that Gallinari's contract runs. A lot of their other guys will have expired by then. Austin Rivers, not that he's essential for all of this. And if DeAndre Jordan leaves or just seriously regresses due to age slash athleticism decline, that'll be an issue. So outside of that, though, I think it's really just teams that aren't good now that haven't figured it out yet.
Yeah, well, I think the Clippers, I considered them, but I thought, you know, they have so much space in 2019, and I think they're going to try and, like, get some players. You know, all they have for that season right now is Gallo and Lou Williams, basically, on the team. But I think that they will do enough in free agency, whether it's re-signing Tobias Harris, whether it's, you know, just finding some pieces who want to come there. I mean, we are talking about a lot of teams that have 2019 space, but we'll see what ends up happening with that, as I mentioned, in the summer 2018 to impact that. My other candidate for bottom two was Memphis. I think that they just don't really have a path to get much better. Gasol has not been able to elevate them at all this year. Mike Conley, who knows what kind of shape he's in when he comes back. I mean, those guys are going to be, what, like 31 and 34 at that point. They could well be traded off the team. They also have a pick that's top eight protected that they owe to the Celtics that they're probably going to want to keep. So that's a big part of this as well. And I think that some of the other teams that are bad and have young guys, that they at least have a path to the young guys getting better, whereas Memphis just doesn't really even have any prospects on the team right now, and neither does Charlotte. So that's why I think, you know, if maybe neither of those teams will be the absolute worst, but I think they're the safest bet to be just kind of hopeless non-playoff teams as of that time.
Memphis, because Conley, Gasol, and Parsons for that 2019-20 season will be making a combined $83 million. Oh, it's going to be brutally hard for them to get better other than through draft picks. Yeah. And, you know, this year, we talked about this on the 15 and 60 yesterday, they're basically only going to have the mid-level exception in their draft picks. And that same story will probably be true to some degree at that point. And so we don't really believe in their young talent. They're seriously in this mix. I just think Conley and Gasol, if they actually are healthy enough to try that year, they're good enough to carry a team far beyond that. But all it would take is one small thing, like what happened this year with Conley being out. Like, one of those two guys being hurt is more than enough.
Well, and I'm not even sure that I expect Gasol to be a positive player by that point, that he's going to be able to play that many years. He also could actually opt out that season as well, though, at $26 million. You know, I don't think we need to get the voice quite ready for that one, but because maybe he might just opt out and want to go somewhere where he feels like he has a better chance of winning. So it wouldn't shock me if he opted out, but and then some of the other, I think Atlanta probably has the least young talent of any of these other teams that are really bad right now,
other than Memphis. Yeah, I had them third on my list.
Yeah, and Brooklyn, you know, they don't have a ton of upside. You know, they'll finally get their pick in 2019. We picked them, well, part of the reasons we picked them as one of the two worst teams, or at least I did, for next year is because next year they actually will have their pick for the first time in forever, and so they probably will want to actually emphasize the tank. But we could also see that, you know, with the new tanking rules, we won't see as much of a race to the absolute bottom by some of these teams, so it's maybe a little harder to predict.
Well, also, Atkinson looks to be a good coach. They still haven't performed a ton, but I think they're doing a lot of things right. They're just not good enough.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I believe in their organization more than some of these others. And Phoenix, Orlando, I mean, they have enough young guys that you would hope that they could at least get to semi-competence where they're not just like scraping the bottom of the league this way. Same thing with Dallas, you know, who I think, again, is another better organization that you don't see being at the absolute bottom here. But there's a lot more variability, I think, in this than there was last year when, you know, I thought Brooklyn and Sacramento were pretty clear choices to be the two worst teams in 2019, at least as of that point. And I'm not really sure. Indiana was a little bit in that discussion for me if they lost Paul George, but obviously getting Oladipo, you know, they're not in that discussion anymore. And we did actually predict that Atlanta would be pretty bad in 2019, which they appear quite on path to do. All right, we'll talk a championship prediction and get to where we see some of the players right after this. At this moment, NCAA March Madness has gripped the nation. All kinds of upsets. We saw a 16 beat a 1 for the first time ever. Even I watched that one. And just like these teams that thought they're going to be playing a number 1 and now they're playing a 16, you have to be ready for whatever the next round brings as well. Make sure your fridge isn't empty by halftime. Swing by Walmart before every round and stock up on Coca-Cola, Coke Zero Sugar, and Powerade. I'm a big Powerade Zero fan. Just drank a lot of those when we went up to the mountains last weekend. Got to stay hydrated. Coca-Cola is the official fan refreshment of the NCAA. Be ready to watch all the games by picking up Coca-Cola and Powerade all tourney long. The tournament isn't just one game, it's a whole tournament. So make sure that you're ready. Refresh every round by heading to Walmart to pick up Coca-Cola, Coke Zero Sugar, and Powerade, or my favorite, Powerade Zero. All right, who is your predicted 2020 NBA champion, Danny?
The Warriors. At this point, yeah. I mean, they still have a ludicrous amount of talent. Having an average age of 30 for their four best players, I think that's still enough to carry it. And at this point, there are a lot of other teams that could be rising powers. I mean, if two max players go to LA, for example, or join forces in some other way, that certainly could happen. But the uncertainty with all of that at this point is outpaced by the Warriors actually being really good. And Houston is, they should be more concerned about age-related regression than the Warriors, because Chris Paul is older than all those guys, and because their support players are just, it's hard to find guys that are so perfect for what they do. And if those guys age out, PJ Tucker's already under contract for that point, it will be brutally hard to replace them.
Yeah, although, you know, certainly it is an organization that has thrived on finding guys at the minimum. But I feel much less certain about Golden State 2020 than I did about Golden State being the favorite in 2019. And even then, in 2019, I felt, you know, some trepidation about picking them. I always felt like next year would be the first year that they wouldn't necessarily be massive favorites coming into the season. We'll see what ends up happening in these playoffs. If they end up cruising the way they did last year, I don't expect that. But if they do end up doing that, then maybe we'll feel that they're as powerful as they ever were. But 2 years from now, you know, if I had to say, hey, what percent chance is there that Golden State wins a championship 2 years from now? You know, I'd say like 1/3 chance, 1 in 4 chance, something like that. You know, I think there's going to be a lot of variability. We don't know where LeBron is going to end up. Some of these young stars could come into their own. Those guys could age out in Golden State. There could be injuries as they get older. It's definitely, the further you get away in time, especially when you're getting guys into their early 30s, they may just, you know, if Steph and KD aren't top 10 players in the NBA anymore, you know, it becomes a lot more difficult to think of Golden State as that type of team. But yeah, I picked them anyway.
Last time I picked, yeah, last time I picked Durant as the 2019 Finals MVP, I'm going to pick him as 2020. I bounced, but he's just value as a scorer and defensive player. The narrative is easy for him, and there are so many talented small forwards in the league. You can imagine him looking good in that series. I would say the most interesting single question in this entire thing for me was MVP for the 2019-20 season, because the age-related progressions of these guys is getting a lot more interesting. I'm pretty proud of myself that I picked Harden for 18-19, because I think that's looking pretty good. And I was not expecting to end up in this direction, but on the logic that, to me, in the modern era, an MVP pretty much has to be a top five offensive player, I'm still going with Harden. I'm going to go with Harden for 19-20. That's, I think, when that's going to be the fall-off year, but I haven't picked the other guy yet. It's kind of like your argument with the Warriors, where the odds of this are lower, but without knowing who the other person is, those odds are distributed through, like, seven guys, and I can't pick any single one of them.
Yeah, last year, I thought it would be Kawhi for 2019. Again, with the things have gone absolutely as poorly for him as they possibly could since then, you know, starting with that ankle injury back in the conference finals, and then the fact that he's barely played this year and the rumors of his discontent, and then also just all these other weird moves that the Spurs have made to lock into this team with all these old bigs. I had Giannis number one at 25. It's interesting to note that he's really the only young wing, you know, three-man, four-man, face the basket type of forward who's really on his way up right now, and I do believe that those are still the most valuable types of players. Now, I am a little bit inconsistent, because I'm not saying that Milwaukee is going to be that good, but there certainly is a scenario in which they could be. Harden was my number two. I mean, as long as he's there, the Rockets are going to run every single thing through him, and they're always going to space the floor, so he's always going to be in the best possible system. We'll see if they start just limiting his minutes a little bit, how much much they're in contention. Number three for me was AD, and four was Kawhi. I still think that if Kawhi had just had the same season again this year that he had last year, he would have been my pick for number one. But you know, he'll be 28 then, and just I can't fully believe in him to be the best player in the league until we see how he comes back from this and where in fact he's even going to be playing his basketball in the 2019-20 season. But I thought those were a pretty clear top four to me of the guys, and who knows where AD's going to be. Maybe he'll be on the Celtics by that point too. I mean, and keep in mind too, this is us saying who we think is going to deserve it. So like, that's why the whole Milwaukee not being as good, or maybe New Orleans not being as good, isn't as big of a roadblock for me. If we're going to predict who we think will win it as opposed to who we think he deserves it, that's a different question and a less interesting one to me.
Let's go to All-NBA. Center, forward, guard is the distinction. That is the distinction we will make. At the center position, I think the key guys worth talking about: Joel Embiid, age 25 season, Karl Anthony Towns, 24, Gobert, 27, Jokic, 24, and Davis, depending on how you want to classify him, age 26. I mean, he'll be an absolute monster at that point, just like he is right now.
Yeah, I had him probably playing as a center. Certainly, if he goes to Boston, that's probably what's going to happen, or maybe they'll just call Al Horford the center, or they'll start Aaron Baines, or you know, whoever the Baines equivalent that year is at center for a little bit. But in my mind, he'll be a center again. These are our picks. I had him at number one. As you mentioned, he'd be 26. Embiid, number two at 25. He can stay healthy. Towns, number three. He'd still only be 24th. Gobert, most likely to break into that at 27. Jokic, to me, especially given how good the center group is right now with his defensive limitations, I'm not sure he's ever going to break into that top for me, even though he'll continue to be a very good player. And then Kristaps Porzingis, I think maybe off this ACL tear, if he loses more mobility, we'll be talking about him more as a center as well. So he could maybe be on this list. I mean, worth noting that Porzingis, you know, I had him at number three on the top prospects list. And then the fact that he tore the ACL, has had more durability concerns. We do that list every year in December, when he's had his awesome 2 months and then he starts declining. So I'm obviously much lower on him now than I was back when we did that list.
Also, Porzingis shifting to center, I think that will help him offensively. It'll be different. We've both been impressed with how he's been able to adjust offensively to playing smaller competition, to using the size advantage rather than the quickness one. But his ability, I mean, looking at what Miles Turner has done this year to pick and pop, and Porzingis has a better jump shot than Miles Turner does, with the right coach or even a solid coach for what they want to do, and by that point their personnel should be much better suited to what Porzingis is doing, because they had these whole misadventures not building the team right. They might not be perfect, but I think they'll be better then. He certainly deserves consideration. I counted Towns as a forward, so my top three was Embiid, then Towns, then Gobert.
Wait, Towns is a forward?
Really wonderful. Those are my centers. And no, I'm sorry, AD is a forward. Embiid, Towns, Gobert, and then yeah, Porzingis would be in there. But I, you know, if Anthony Davis were on this list, I would have him number one.
Yep. Now, people might be asking about, oh, hey, you know, what about like guys who aren't in the NBA yet? I mean, the players to make an all NBA team in their second year, I mean, there are not many of those guys, and not even their second year, but, you know, in the one and done era, when we're talking about guys who are 20, 21 years old making an all NBA team, that's a tough ask. I would say, you know, Al Horford and LaMarcus Aldridge, who are in consideration now, they'll be 33 and 34, so they'll probably drop out of it. Cousins at 29, we don't know how he's going to come back from the Achilles, and you know, he was on the fringes of this anyway for me. And Andre Drummond, I just don't think has the upside to quite get into all NBA conversation, even though he incredibly will still only be 26 at that point.
Let's move on to the forwards. Here, the question is aging versus development. Giannis is number one on my list. I mean, I think he has a serious MVP candidacy at that point. I had him behind Harden, but still could be there. Age 25. I had Kawhi second, yep. Age 28 yeah. Season for him. And then I had Davis third, which gave me heartburn, where I had Davis as like the fourth best player in the league, but on the second team because I counted him. I didn't like that, but hey, I'm going to follow my own rules. You know how rigid I am. So I'm going to do that. And then my other second team guy, I had some real struggles with this. Ended up going with Kevin Durant, age 31 year.
Rather than LeBron.
Still be a phenomenal score. Rather than LeBron, age 35. I moved him to the third team. And the thing I want to see with you, because so you have more spots here because you had Davis as a center. Where were you going with those extra ones? So LeBron versus Durant and those kind of guys is one question, but then after that, where did you go?
Yeah, so my second team was Durant at 31, LeBron at 35. And then second team was tough. I threw Ben Simmons in there, although, you know, I think of him more as a forward, and especially if Fultz is playing, I think he'll pretty clearly be a forward. He'll be 23 at that point, Simmons will be. And then I still stuck with Paul George. I think he'll age a little bit better than Jimmy Butler, who'd be 30 by that point, just due to his shooting. I think he's a little bit better defensively. He got some more length. Some of the other candidates that I had, Draymond Green, you know, I think he's already out of all NBA consideration for me this year. I shouldn't say out of consideration, but he's dropped off quite a bit. Two more years for the undersized four could be enough that, you know, especially during the regular season, tough to give an all NBA nod. Gordon Hayward's another guy who could be in consideration here, depending on how he comes back from the ankle. And then among the young guys, Jason Tatum, and these are all guys who aren't anywhere close. They would just have to develop at a crazy rate. Jason Tatum, who would still only be 22 at that point, Jaylen Brown at 23, Brandon Ingram at 22, and then Lauri Markkanen and Jabari Parker, who will be 22 and 24. Those are the guys. Was there anyone else I missed in among the young forwards who you think we should even mention here?
It's a pretty big stride to get in there. I thought for a little bit of time about Aaron Gordon. I just don't see it there for him. The two-way game that we hoped would be a part of Aaron Gordon's profile, it's possible, but I don't think it's likely enough to be there. And so, yeah, I think that's about the whole list. Yeah, and as much as I love the potential of OG Anunoby, he would have to reach offensively a level that is far, far beyond what he has done so far. So, yeah, I would say that's a pretty good list. I realized now that I didn't mention this. My last forward spot ended up going to Ben Simmons. The offensive workload that he handles, and I think he's been good defensively this year. I also picked the Sixers to be number two in my, you know, top two list for the Eastern Conference, so he would get a lot of that shine as well. So I picked him, but I just think he'll be really good because he's already quite good.
The guards was, as usual, pretty difficult. I had who did we have last year, by the way? Should we talk about that? Pretty similar list, right? I think I had Kawhi and Giannis first team, LeBron and KD second team, and then Draymond and Gordon Hayward as the third team, you know, not knowing that was going to be that he was going to struggle with this injury. We also thought he was going to be on Utah still and still be the number one option, I didn't think necessarily that he was, but that seemed like the most likely outcome. So, but feel okay with those. Maybe Draymond should have anticipated him falling off a little bit more than we did.
Yeah, I had Durant and Kawhi as my first team, you know, depending on who's healthy. I just, with Giannis, I need to see a little bit more, and he has delivered. Yeah. Absolutely, he has. And I'm pretty happy I had Embiid on my third team. And then having Lillard on my second team was good, and I have Lillard on my second team again, to lead into the guards a little bit.
Oh, yeah, we should also probably talk about who we had at center. Last year, I was probably a little too high on Towns. I had him first team, you know, thinking his defense would evolve more than it has. AD second. I think I had, you know, viewed Towns as the better prospect than AD at that time. I don't any longer. And then actually had Jokic on the third team. I think the biggest reason for that was because I just didn't trust Joel Embiid's health at all. Gobert, I wasn't quite as high on him. They didn't defend as well last year as they have this year. So, and Cousins, I think I thought he wasn't going to age too well. And that turned out to be disastrously correct on him.
So let's get to the guards. Here, like with the forwards, it's aging versus development. One point I want to make at the beginning of this, which I think I actually talked about on last year's show like this, is just this weird age gap that there is in point guards right now. So there just aren't that many point guards in their mid-20s. So you have, like, you know, Lillard and Curry and those kind of guys that are a little bit older. Those guys are kind of in their late 20s, early 30s at this point, and they'll be moving beyond that. And then other than Kyrie, who's 25, there's just this gap of years that aren't that good. So then
John Wall having fallen off hurts that a little bit. You know, if you thought maybe he'd take a step forward.
And Kemba, you know, Kemba's done better, but he's not that, I don't think of him as like that star. Like, he could make an All-NBA team, but I wouldn't expect it. So basically the bet you're making is, will the guys that are post-prime hold on before the young guys catch up to them?
Yeah, and it's difficult to know which of those young guys it will be as well, both at shooting guard and at point guard. So I went with Harden and Kyrie as my first team. And I mean, last year, you know, I didn't have Kyrie that high, but that's in part because he was playing on a Cleveland team with LeBron James. And now that he's on his own in Boston, he's had a chance to shine a little bit more. I mean, you know, it sort of evolved over a long period of time, the whole Kyrie trade request, and then it became clear that Boston was on the list and blah, blah. But just how completely insane would it have sounded at this point last year that Kyrie Irving was on the Celtics right now? That's just like, would have been batshit insane to think about that.
And then the ability that we, at this point, to know that it looks like it's working out reasonably well, that he was able to adjust the system. He's had a very nice year for them. And there will be growing pains bringing back Gordon Hayward and whatever else they do. I mean, Danny Ainge is always trying to add more talent. But I have Kyrie's second team. I still think, I mean, Curry is a superlative offensive talent, and I don't see that part of it changing as much for him. So to me, you have to get knocked off that top line from Curry and Harden, and I'm not giving either one of those. And then I have Lillard and Kyrie on the second line, partially because those guys are both spectacular offensive players, and partially because I think they have the best chance to become those special offensive players that you would need to be.
I'm just amazed you didn't have 34-year-old Chris Paul still on the second team. Do you...
I don't even have him on the third team. It hurt my heart.
I know it did.
I have a guy on my third team that I actually, there's a chance that he's worse. They'll be worse than Chris Paul, but I just couldn't do it. I couldn't.
Yeah. I mean, at 34, you know, there's how many 34-year-old point guards have ever made first team All NBA? I mean, you know, Steve Nash,
especially that were as small as he is.
Steve Nash maybe has played at close to that level as a 34-year-old, but it's tough to really point to that. But yeah, I think, you know, Curry, part of my rationale was, I mean, we've seen how the Warriors have already taken it easy. I mean, can you imagine now if they're in their sixth straight year of championship contention 2 years from now, of just how slow they're going to be taking it in the regular season? Like, they could be like the fourth seed or something by that point. So, and Curry has had injury problems. I think it's just, it's more even about games played and just kind of taking it easy in the regular season. I expect him to be a pretty big defensive liability by that point as well. But I had Lillard and Curry on the, go ahead.
Oh, one small point for Chris Paul. The argument in his favor, John Stockton, his age 34 season, he made, I think he was third team All-NBA that year, and he actually made an All-NBA team 2 years later. He was third team.
Yeah, the league also sucked at that point, but...
also fair.
After a ton of expansion and some really bad drafts, I've talked about this before, from 88 to 91, if you go back and look at those drafts, like all the players who should have been in their prime in like 1996 just, you know, were in those bad drafts and never really panned out. So yeah, I had Lillard and Curry on the second team, Harden and Kyrie on the third team, and then And then the third team, I started to go a little bit more into the depths. I went with Donovan Mitchell, who will be 23 at that point, on the third team. And I also had Victor Oladipo, who I think I've maybe been higher on than some people have. You know, if he can consolidate his games, he'll be kind of along there. But there are a lot of candidates, whether it's the old guard or the new. I think it was really hard for me to pick out who I think is going to be. It really could be anyone, I think, there.
Yeah, to go through. So the old guard, Chris Paul, 34. Russell Westbrook, who was actually my last pick, 31. I just think he's going to put up numbers.
But this is who we think should make it.
This is deserving.
Yeah.
That's true. DeRozan at 30, I think, has a reasonable chance. I mean, he's gotten so much better. Full credit to him. I mean, that's been really impressive. John Wall, 29, maybe. And then the young guard. Well,
yeah, I won't even put Wall in the maybe category. I think it's really, I mean, it could happen, I guess, but especially when you consider the injuries.
If you're going to put Wall in, we should put Kemba in too, because those guys, I mean, at this point.
Yeah, I mean, Kemba hasn't reached the level that Wall has at his best.
True.
But yeah, I mean, there's some other guys still who are kind of at a lower level now, like CJ McCollum, Brad Beal, Klay Thompson will be 29. You know, maybe those guys could take another step forward. And then there's some youngs too, a shooting guard. Andrew Wiggins will be 24, still not buying him, but, you know, has to always be on these lists until further notice. And then Devin Booker is the other one too, who could take potentially a major leap forward. He'll still only be 23, amazingly enough, then as well.
And then at point guard, you said Donovan Mitchell. He's a little bit older than some of these guys, but he's a contender for Rookie of the Year. He's having a great season, and we can see how his game can progress, and I like his defensive potential as well. But should also mention Jamal Murray will be 22, Dennis Smith, 22, De'Aaron Fox, 22, Markel Fultz, if he can ever get healthy, and Wright, 21, and Lonzo will be 22 as well.
Yeah, and tough to say with the pure point guards. You know, those guys really just develop so much later generally, and I mean, we're talking about guys in Smith and Fox who are basically at the bottom of the NBA in RPM right now. Murray is one who's a little, you know, because of his shooting, I think it's possible that he could just, you know, as I've said before, I'm not... certain of this. I'm not predicting this, but I believe that he does have some amount of Steph Curry in his game with the versatility of his jump shot. And, you know, he certainly has really come on from 3-point range. So if he just starts, you know, shooting 40% on off the dribble threes all the time, and could get a little bit better defensively, you know, I'm not as worried about him on the aging curve of having to be like, you know, because he doesn't have as many playmaking responsibilities. Maybe he can just concentrate more as a scorer. I think Mitchell was probably the one because he's so far ahead of a lot of these guys defensively. And we know that his role is going to be huge there. He's going to be the guy with the ball in his hands on what's going to project to be a pretty good team.
As something to keep in the back of your mind, John Wall had injury problems early in his career, but that 2012-13 season was his age 22 year. That was one where he played 49 games and was coming back. I actually covered the Wizards a lot that year because I was living in DC. And you saw signs of what he was going to be, but he still wasn't, even when he was healthy, he wasn't an all-NBA type player. It took another year for him to make an all-star team and then get into all of that kind of stuff. So it's fair to say that with some of those young guys, we will see the signs, but that's very different from already establishing yourself as an all-NBA player.
Yeah, and maybe we're not giving Westbrook and DeRozan enough credit, particularly Westbrook, but I think the steps back that he's taken this year have been pretty worrisome, and the reliance on athleticism also, you know, at 30, 31, I mean, I'm just not sure if he can play the same style and play at an all-NBA level. I mean, I could see him being a damaging player due to his inefficiency, and, you know, I won't say he's been a damaging player this year, but he certainly has been, you know, below the league average in efficiency, which he hasn't been before. Would you agree with me that Mitchell is the best chance of these young guys are kind of breaking into this group, or would you put someone else there?
I would have Mitchell there because I can already see the outlines of what his game will be at that point, and he's gotten a lot better during the course of this year, so I could totally see that progression from him. So yeah, I would say that Booker is in many ways really interesting just because one of the biggest limitations for him right now is just the talent around him, and the Suns can't be worse from a talent perspective than they are right now. So if he can just slide into maybe being the like 1.5 option offensively, and then they have a competent defense around him, I could certainly see Booker being that type of player. But I still think his defense is going to suck. I still think that his offense is high potency but not as consistent as I would like. So I think he's worth discussing and has a serious chance of it, but expected value wise I'm not going to put him over Mitchell at that point.
Yeah, I agree with you. What about those young forwards? I mean, we mentioned Tatum, Brown, Ingram, Markkanen, Jabari. Out of those five guys, who do you think is most likely to be on an all-NBA team 2 years from now?
Probably Tatum, just because I could see the two-way offense and defensive role, because he's more comfortable with the ball in his hands than a lot of those guys and can shoot.
And when he gets traded for Anthony Davis, he's going to be able to take as many shots as he wants. No, I mean, that's the tough thing for him, for both him and Braun, is just, are they really going to get enough of the ball in their hands with presumably Kyrie and Hayward still on that team and maybe a trade made for another star? I would say just because of that reason that Ingram, who, although I'm not as high on him as long-term as some of these other guys, just, you know, the Lakers have been throwing him the ball a ton.
But the Lakers, if the argument is that they're going to be good, they're going to be getting somebody over him in the offensive pecking
order. That's a good point. Maybe they just don't. You know, maybe that's part of it. And then, you know, Markkanen, to me, has the clearest path of any of these guys because he's already able to get all these shots off, right? I mean, he could just become this unbelievable shooter. Like, the ball just has to go in a little bit more for him. And if they feature him and get some more talent around him, all of a sudden, you know, he could really blow up, I think. He would have to be a unique historical player. You know, I'm not saying he's going to be Dirk Nowitzki. No one ever has been. Maybe no one ever will be. But maybe he's the guy who, and especially that's going to be a team that is so starved for offense that if he does blow up, he's going to get all he can eat there. That's a tough call to say who you is. But I think of all those players, I probably like Tatum the most as a prospect.
Not on the young guy thing, but one player that I think we should mention for all NBA consideration that we didn't talk about is Kevin Love. That'll be his age 31 season. I just think he's so talented offensively. There's absolutely a chance that he is at that level. I mean, we don't know it, but I just wanted to mention him as one of these.
I guess so. I don't think so. I mean, I think it's more likely than not he ends up actually opting into that last year of his contract, that, you know, whatever it is, $24 million or something in this year that we're talking about. Let's see, what is he at that year? Yeah, $25.6 million that year. I think he probably will opt in. And I mean, him at 31, especially when you consider where his defense is going to be at that point, I would be really surprised. Like, I guess he's worth talking about because he's at that level now, but barely to me. Something that is worth talking about, however, is our Patreon, patreon.com/DuncanLarue. Danny has made another contribution to our subscribers.
Yeah, Danny's story time on the Stepien rule, not only the mechanics and implementation of it, but also telling the story of the history of why it exists with Ted Stepien and the misguided couple years that he had as owner of the Cleveland Cavaliers. So it's a fun thing, and it's basically an audio version of my piece, but also I like to on those as it's kind of a director's cut. I talk about a director's commentary, maybe more, talk about what were my challenges writing it, and this piece in particular that was relevant because I've written about the Stepien rule up, but deliberately avoided writing the CBA encyclopedia piece for Real GM because I just didn't have the right angle on it, and it took me until now to figure out how I wanted to do it.
All right, also a reminder, the Patreon helps support our Twitter NBA show. Big game on Wednesday, Raps at Cavaliers. That'll be a fun one. We have not had a chance to do that many Raptors games, so excited about doing that. And that's our, if you haven't listened to that yet, you follow me on Periscope at Nate Duncan NBA, or you can get an alert whenever you go live. There's a little bell next to my name on Twitter. You can click that when we go to live video. And we only do that when we're actually doing a show. So that alert hopefully won't spam you too badly. And the Twitter NBA show is basically an alternate play-by-play. I do the play-by-play. Danny gets the caller, and then we take a ton of questions. It's a great way if you want to complain about something that we said on the podcast, or you want to ask whatever questions you want about any part of the NBA, it's a great way to get in touch with us, get our responses in real time. We really enjoy the community that's been building on those shows. I think people even interact with each other in the comments, which is pretty fun. And every once in a while, you'll see like some spam bots for like internet porn, but generally I try to block them pretty quickly. That'll do it for today, and we'll be back. Probably going to do a gamer tomorrow. Got some interesting ones. Thunder Celtics. Hopefully Kyrie will be back for that one. Rockets Blazers. That'll be an awesome game. Looking forward to watching that one, and we'll have that for you with analysis on Dunked On tomorrow night. Talk to y'all then. This is one of the best times of year for sports fans. NCAA March Madness. So many games, you never know what's going to happen, but you better be ready for whatever the next round brings. If your fridge is empty by halftime, your friends are going to leave, so you better swing by Walmart before every round. Stock up on Coca-Cola, Coke Zero Sugar, and Powerade, Powerade Zero being my personal favorite of those, before the next game tips off. NCAA March Madness isn't just one game, it's a whole tournament. Make sure you're ready. Refresh every round by heading to Walmart to pick up Coca-Cola, Coke Zero Sugar, and Powerade.